Support for Commodity Week comes from the Friends of WILL and from Strategic Farm Marketing in Champaign. With crop insurance, grain marketing, and commodity brokerage services. Learn more at sfarmmarketing.com.
This is the August 10 edition of Commodity Week.
Todd Gleason services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Welcome to Commodity Week. I am Todd Gleason. Our panelists today include Bill Gentry of Risk Management Commodities out of Lafayette, Indiana, Greg Ginder of FC Stone from Chesterfield, Missouri, and Brian Stark of the Andersons. Commodity Week, of course, is a production of Illinois Public Media. Look us up. Listen to us on demand at WILLAG.org. Brian Stark, I'd like to start with you. USDA's numbers released Friday morning, the crop production report. And the WASD figures very bearish for both corn and soybeans, especially for soybeans. Did this scare you as you thought about where you in Champaign County might be able to store all of this grain, especially at your elevator facility there at the Andersons?
I would say that we certainly have what the government thinks is a pretty good crop. In our area, I would agree with that. Nationwide, I think the surprise for me looking at some of the numbers was maybe not necessarily the overall yield, but how quickly they went with a high ear weight this early in the game. Not disputing it, but it's surprising that it's the third highest in the last 15 years that we've seen reported. And we talked a little bit before we came on air about higher population counts. And so obviously that is certainly presents a storage potential challenge if that's realized. Obviously the bean crop is massive, and that was kind of the eyesore today per se.
Yeah, so Greg Ginder on the idea that we have this high ear weight, we have high population for corn. What does it do to the marketplace as it relates to storage and basis across the United States? And does it vary very much from region to region?
Oh, I would say it definitely will vary. I would imagine that most of the country will probably put as much of this crop away, but there's just going to be a lot that is going to need to find a home somewhere, and open space at the elevator is probably going to be that home. I would say rates will probably start off somewhat average by comparison from one year to the next, but I would say towards the end, if you don't have space booked, you might be looking at a little higher in charge and possibly higher per month.
Yeah, so I want to come back to you, Brian, on that, because as he started in on that, I was thinking about the in charges and what the monthly fees might be. And I know you may or may not have thought about this and changes that the Andersons might need to make. But how often does that happen that you might change those charges, especially after I would think many of the elevators have already thought about what that is and told their customer base?
Right. So we establish it based on available space and needs according to the market, based on the market carry. And obviously, I think that's been consistent with us over the years. I anticipate it being very similar. Usually you start to see rates come out closer to September 1. So in the next few weeks, I'm sure those rates will be determined. And as many others allude to, and as you can see the crop coming, space is going to be a premium. I don't anticipate it, being something that's going to be comfortable given the size of the crop. And there's going to be a struggle for everyone to try and figure out where to put it, not just the size of the corn crop, but the size of the bean crop being massive. The combination of the two, I think logistically, might be just a tad challenging.
Hey, Bill Gentry, I want to bring something else up with you. While we talk about a big corn crop and the production number is big, the yield at 14.58 billion bushels, the yield number is big at 178.4. The ending stocks or the carryout, still not that great for, or in large in size actually, for corn at 1.684 billion bushels. That has to be supportive at some point.
Yeah, I think it does. I think when you look at the corn market overall, with the number that jumped off the page to me was that demand figure that's just bumping on the door of 15 billion bushels. You know, it wasn't that long ago that we just had a 10 billion bushel corn crop production, and we thought that that was huge. Now we're consuming it. Our stocks-to-use ratio is 11.2%. That just tells us that even though the carryout is creeping up, or you know, is fairly large, we're consuming it just about as fast as we can grow it. And if we have any hiccups in production, Katie bar the door, this thing's going to wake up and be a challenge for us.
Do you think we can change what this USDA number looks like very much in September and October? And from your perspective, Bill, is this the biggest number we'll see?
You know, I'm cautiously optimistic that that yield figure is as high as it's going to be. I know that they took into consideration the crop ratings, which have been exceptionally high all season long. But I think realistically, we're going to see some yield numbers probably in a few weeks. And with that might give us a little bit more of a shot of reality to sink our teeth into and for what the USDA to look at. So I think it's possible that we inked the biggest numbers of the season so far. And I don't know that we can take them down. But what it really does is tells us where basically the high for the time being is probably in place. The other thing that I think most producers need to be very, very mindful of is what our basis is going to do, because we're going to have some areas where basis is going to probably turn horrendous to levels that we haven't seen in several, several years. So we need to be mindful that we need to be moving sooner rather than later.
It seems odd, and I'll let Brian, you and Greg both answer this one, kind of following up, that we have a carryover at 1.684 billion when we've been looking at 2.21, 2.22, 2.23, 2.24, and still we're down this low on the price of corn. What do you tell producers at this point? And maybe Brian, I'll start with you.
I think you have to focus on revenue. It always starts there, and I think we get wrapped up a lot in what the price is doing. But you know, at 350 corn, obviously we're not there today, but if what we've been telling producers the last month or two is that if you've got potential for 250 bushel corn at 350 is more revenue than what you generate at 200 bushel corn at $4. So for us it comes back to the revenue side of the equation. I agree with what others have said, that the balance sheet looks supportive. Unfortunately, with the weight of the bean balance sheet kind of weighing down corn, it may be hard for it to get excited and truly trade a 1.7 type carryout until we get past harvest into the first part of 2019 and start talking about acreage. So in the meantime, the producer needs to really look at his production, focusing on revenue, and lock in a profitable price, because it may be a little while before we achieve price targets that they're hoping for down the road.
Greg, I'd like you to follow up, but then can you turn and pivot just a bit into the soybean demand side?
Absolutely. Well, the interesting thing that I found in the corn ending stocks, that if we assume that these ending stocks will be what we're going to have as a final, the last time that we had stocks that was of 1.6 to 1.7 was the 2013-2014 year. So, I mean, one has to kind of take that into a really optimistic look at corn, with the only thing being that the bean stocks, I went back all the way back to some of the 2012-13 numbers, and I couldn't find an ending stock on beans that was nearly as ugly as the one that we're looking at currently. Now, granted, that ending stock on beans, let's be mindful that there's 200 million bushels of exports that was tacked on to that. So, I mean, if we assume that every bean has a home and that 200 to 250 million number goes back into the exports at some point in time this year, which it may not all, but I would like to think that a good portion of that will find a home one way or another. I would like to think that this ending stock is closer to, you know, 600. So I'm optimistic from that standpoint. From whatever I've heard from all my friends in the export business, they've kind of said that the $1.50 to $2 spread or discount that the U.S. beans has in the world market has found a lot of smaller buyers, where the Chinese are your big buyer. A lot of smaller buyers take up just as many beans. So I'm optimistic in that standpoint.
Do you think that demand can be maintained throughout the marketing year on the small buyer side?
My personal opinion is that it won't be as there will be a lag. We won't be able to replace every sale, but I would certainly like to believe that there is just as much opportunity to get as many sales on as we have seen, maybe not last year, but very, very close. I mean, the Brazilians themselves, the Argentines, if they aren't going to buy beans, they're going to hold them off the market, and that'll provide more opportunity for us.
Any reason, Brian Stark, to think that South America will hold off planting as many bean acres as maybe we expected? We keep seeing numbers that are creeping up all season long.
Yeah, I don't anticipate that today. Given the demand is going to be pointed strictly at them to produce as many beans as possible, as long as the tariffs are in place, I don't see any change unless we take a major leg lower into the below $8 range on the board, which if we don't get some of the export demand back, I suppose is certainly a possibility, although I'm with them that, you know, moving forward, I think we're going to see some of that demand come back into our table, and our carryout's probably going to be in the 550 to 600 million range before it's all said and done.
Did bean basis change very much today, Brian?
It hasn't, you know, and that's what's surprising. It's been weakish in general. If you look down at the Gulf, the SIF market has been a train wreck ever since the tariffs have been put in place. That has not changed. We have not seen the next leg lower on the basis side, which could come once you start to see harvest pressuring space in the interior. But today, it's already at a low water mark, and I guess, you know, the next leg lower isn't going to come until that space crunch starts to develop here in the next 60 days.
Anything that producers should be doing, Bill Gentry, as it relates to soybeans, because most of them or a lot of them are likely to sell across the scale. Some may be able to find place to store a bean crop, but I suspect they'll more likely store a big corn crop. Should they lock in basis at this point, even though it's wide? I'm wondering what you think they should do.
Yeah, I think the bottom line is I could do the basis game, or I could actually do some cash sales if I'm going to have to move it, and then look at first and re-ownership down the road. One of the things that I was going to touch on in your global numbers, too, that is a little bit supportive, is they only ratcheted down the global demand about 0.5 million metric tons. When you've got a demand base that's that good, it really says something about the overall demand. The other thing, too, and like you guys were talking about, some of the big sales like to China are not going to happen, but in my estimation, you can probably trim 4 or 5% out of the global demand base with a critical problem. But the bottom line is there's still got buyers out there, and they will consume the rest of those beans. We might have to source them in different directions, but the demand is still out there, and it's relative on the sheet or on today's numbers.
Greg Ginder, you work or have worked the St. Louis area for a long time and looked at the export market. Can you give me your view of both corn and soybean exports going forward?
Well, sure. We had a little bit of a snafu here in locally. We had a lock that went down that held a lot of barges out of the Gulf. So we saw some quick ship corn boats that needed to be loaded, and we saw a pretty good pop in the basis and the SIF values there. Barge freight has been creeping higher because of that lack of empties that are turning around out of the Gulf. So we've seen basis be a little bit, it's just kind of inside out a little bit. We've seen barge freight start to relax a little bit with that lock being fixed and those barges starting to make their way to the Gulf. My estimation is probably as we get into harvest, say around the Memphis area, those empties should be, you know, just in time inventory for this harvest. I mean, they might get back just in time. If they don't, we'll continue to see some of these higher values on barge freight, which will keep basis a little bit depressed. If we can get them back before harvest, we could probably see the basis get a touch better leading into harvest. But this is such a big crop. I'm not really sure how much of this corn is actually going to be stashed on the farm and in storage, because if this market holds up the way that it is, I would say that the beans will probably be the ones that will find on-farm storage, and the corn will be the marketable commodity at these current rates of prices. It's yet to see if that's actually going to happen. It's been the opposite in the last 3 to 5 years. It's been guys would rather sell 1,000 bushels of beans instead of, you know, 3,000 bushels of corn to generate the same amount of revenue. So it's going to be interesting to see how it all plays out. If that many beans do make their way to the market, it will definitely depress the basis on soybeans, with them working twice as hard to find a home for twice as many beans.
Hey, Bill, any reason to think that the USDA payment that Sonny Perdue and the Trump administration has talked about might push soybeans into the marketplace sooner rather than later?
It's very possible. I think realistically, that's still a work in motion. But I think the process right now, and I think, you know, I've already talked over with most of my guys down in Kentucky, which were doing exactly that. They were selling corn to make room for so they could store beans. So I think realistically, that's the farmer's mindset right now. Because the other thing, too, is the comment that the corn is profitable and the beans are not at these price levels, for a lot of guys anyway. So to answer your question about the government payment, I don't think that's going to be a real big decision maker. I think that we're just waiting for the paint or the ink to dry on the document.
What's your biggest worry, Brian, at this point about the marketplace going into the fall?
I just think what we've talked about, logistics. I think obviously space and the movement and being able to stay fluid, I think, is going to be the biggest challenge. I would like to say and add a comment to what the other two guys have already mentioned, that beans, if you look at it from a strict hedging and carry standpoint, are some of the best carries we've seen in quite a few years. You know, Nov to July being 38 to 40 cents versus corn in the 26 to 27 cent range. I think that's a smart play for the producer, especially when you talk about profitability, to be looking to store beans. I think that's going to be the tough card for most commercials, most farmers trying to figure out how to store everything. And beans seem to be the best value today versus moving corn to town. But logistics are definitely going to be the biggest challenge and concern here moving forward in the next 30 to 60 days.
Do you think producers, Brian, will really decide to store more beans than they do corn?
No, I don't. I don't, because I think in our area, I think corn is king, and obviously corn values tend to present better storability or what they want to choose to store on farm. But economically, I guess my message is to really sit down and analyze what makes the most sense, because beans at prices where we are today may not be as profitable versus potentially delivering and paying storage in an elevator versus selling a more profitable price on corn today and moving it instead. So it's something you need to analyze, but I have my skepticism that we'll see more beans enter storage locally versus corn, simply because that's what the producer likes to do, is store corn.
Can I ask you one more question? Because I just frankly don't know the answer. I was thinking that soybeans are much harder to store than corn, just physically, that it takes more to take care of them. Am I right or wrong?
I think it depends on the moisture that goes into the bin. It's all about quality and how you manage that. If the corn is dry, I think it's much easier. Same thing with beans. But typically, based on history and experience, it's easier to carry corn longer than it is soybeans. So to your point, you are correct. But I think under the right conditions, either commodity can be managed.
Yeah, so that's what I was thinking. Trying to get soybeans to maybe January or February probably wasn't going to be that hard. But if you were thinking June, July, that might be much more difficult.
It just depends on how wet you cut them. I think if you have a dry commodity, we've had success or seen success, guys carrying them into the spring and early summer. And I think that's the mindset a guy has to look at when he's playing out his economics on what he's going to put on farm.
Bill Gentry, any other numbers from the USDA reports today, WASD or crop production, that popped out of you that you want to talk about, or any other topic?
Well, the only thing that really kind of gets my attention is the fact that the wheat market's looking a lot more attractive this year than it has for the last several years. Your stocks-to-use ratio is down almost to 40%. Last year, we were carrying 50, 55%. So I think that market has given us some encouragement in the periphery. And I think if the wheat market continue to stand in there, I think that gives the corn market just a little bit of an added nod of approval going forward. So I like the wheat numbers. They're going in the right direction, and I think it's helping corn market in general.
Kind of the same question for you as well, Greg Ginder. Anything that stood out to you today or that you want to make sure that we get across?
Well, I think that ending stock on corn number is, that was the one that just jumped off the page, that and the bean ending stocks. You had the highest of high and the lowest of lows when you looked at those numbers. But I will agree, I think wheat is a very interesting commodity when you look at like the French Motif exchange, it has just been a skyrocket higher with a couple gaps that probably need to be filled in at some point in time. So when it retraces, which could be here in the short term, I think it'll make another leg higher. And I think that's when our crops or our wheat crop will probably see a great appreciation also. You know, we'll just have to, it's going to be, we're not going to see the kind of numbers that we want to see come out of corn and beans, but if we can get wheat to do a lot of the heavy lifting to add some confidence to these index funds and things like that, I think we can definitely add some good value to some farmers out there.
So do each of you believe that farmers just need to buckle under at this point and say, look, these are the numbers we're going to deal with, and even if they change some, we're still going to have a big crop for both corn and soybeans, and that's how I need to market this. I think maybe I'll start with you, Brian.
Yeah, I think that's exactly how you need to look at it. I think the numbers can and will change as we get more accurate ear weight, pod weight eventually here moving forward the next few months. But I think no one will dispute that the crop is going to be fairly large. Space is going to be at a premium. And I think you have to really look at, again, back to my storability comment of what makes the most economic sense. If you can sell corn at a profit, you need to think about doing that and then try and hold the commodity that may not be as profitable a sale today in your storage and manage it that way and focus on revenue. Because while I'm friendly to corn longer term, it may be early 2019 before we see the surge that many expect with the balance sheet. And until we get some of these trade issues resolved.
You're going to hedge on a six-month look at maybe a weather market in South America, I take it then.
Yes, yes.
Just yes, straight up. That's what we...
Yeah, well, I think that's certainly a play, but I think to the point of the balance sheet on corn, it presents the fact that we have opportunity to see higher corn prices. We need to plant more corn acres in 2019 given the balance sheet, and the market's going to have to make sure it has it encourages the producer at a price level that he will do so. And so to me, the corn market has more upside today than soybeans, if you want to ask me that question.
Well, but that's not what you're telling producers to do. You want them to store the soybeans, but that's a purely economics for this year.
It's an economic looking at the carry, not necessarily price, correct?
I think yes. Time for a final word from each of you at this point. We'll start with you, Bill Gentry from Risk Management Commodities out of Lafayette, Indiana.
Well, the biggest thing right now is probably still being proactive. If we get a bounce or a retracement back to the upside, make sure that we're looking to reward it. Also, looking at the put options, you can go out there for a December 350 put option for just a little more than a nickel. You know, that could chuck the wheels a little bit, and just in case, and take some of the pressure off. And doing basically a low cost put in beans probably wouldn't be a bad idea either. So both of those are viable solutions after you've made reasonable catch up sales. I know most of our guys are probably 50 to 70% sold already, so I think we're in pretty good shape. But I'm really nervous or really challenged about the next 30 to 50% that we still have to do, because they really took some of the wind out of the sails today.
Greg Ginder of FC Stone.
Well, one of the things that we've been discussing this week with our producers is how much is it going to take for them to get to January? Because everybody believes that, you know, if they can hold out till January, you know, the better prices are on the horizon. I mean, if it takes 20 cents to get to January or more, well, then a guy has to really sit down and make a hard swallow and probably sell it out of the field because these... I just don't believe that there's just enough juice in this corn market to reward somebody for paying storage. I think a lot of this stuff probably needs to be looked at very hard, try to make a good basis decision, and do it from a standpoint of economics on a nickel, not a quarter. So that would be what I would add to any conversation.
And Brian Stark of the Andersons, your final word.
I think to Greg's point, I think you have to look at potentially avoiding higher storage charges on corn and potentially selling it across the scale. And if you want to stay long, replace it with some sort of call option strategy. I think that's my message that I was trying to get across earlier regarding corn prices and the friendliness, because I think ultimately it's probably not going to be economic to pay storage here this fall.
Commodity Week is a production of Illinois Public Media. Find us online. Listen to us on demand anytime you'd like at willag.org, in the iTunes Store, Google Play, on the NPR One app, in Stitcher, and any other place that you might listen to a podcast. Our thanks go to our panelists this week, including Bill Gentry of Risk Management Commodities out of Lafayette, Indiana, Greg Ginder from FC Stone in Chesterfield, Missouri, and Brian Stark of the Andersons, right here in Champaign County, Illinois. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason.